ready?
I'm ready, dude.
All right, let's do this. So, welcome to the first Pipe Dreams podcast, guys. This is the first one. We're going to, like we said, we're going to go in depth with the racing world and dig out stories that hopefully nobody's ever heard. I've got my good buddy here, Corey Alexander, a longtime friend, old teammate. And we just decided to start this thing. And we're pretty late to the podcast world. We're here at our Cali studio in Chuckwalla, the Ocho, the garage, the infamous garage in Chuckwalla. And yeah, Corey, how you doing?
I'm good. We just had a good day of riding. We're lucky to have Joe out here hanging out with us. And
just going
to
drop our first guest like that, huh?
Just like that. Yeah, I mean, that's what we're here to do.
Mr. Playboy
himself, the boy next door.
Yeah. So we got our first guest here. I don't think he needs any introduction. Joe Roberts, we're stoked to have you on as our first guest.
Thanks, man. Yeah, stoked to be here, man.
So you're here. We got you out riding Chuckwalla. How was it, man?
It was sick. I got here last night, slept in my van. It's not insulated at all. It froze my ass off, but had a great day of riding. It was really, really fun to come out. Rode one of your V2s.
Yeah.
It was sick. I haven't been here for like a year, so.
Yeah, I mean, we just moved to California and it's been raining for the last two weeks.
Terrible, man. This is awful, the weather.
I think it might be warmer in New York right now, which is crazy.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, man.
I think so, people are saying. But yeah, no, it was great to have you. We just had a big crew of guys that came out and were riding with us. Everyone was stoked to have you out once they figured out who you were. They were all like, "You think we could get a tow behind him? Think we could keep up with him?" We had Greg White's brother, Jeff White.
Oh,
he's the better White brother, but he was like, I think I got something for him.
No way. Dude, this track has gotten better. They repaved or like cleaned it up or something. You were saying
it's repaved.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so definitely
resurfaced. Like a full repave. So yeah, they ground down that first layer and then laid a new one down, which for sure made a lot better. I think you were here last year on a V4 or something, right?
Yeah, there were some serious cracks in this track.
Hanging onto a V4?
Yeah, basically.
Ripping your arms off.
Have you been riding at all since the season ended?
Yeah, I took some time off. I went to New York actually for 2 weeks, which was really nice. I have a bunch of buddies that live out there, so stayed there for 2 weeks and went and found this motorcycle shop, built like this old 73 Triumph 750 engine.
Yeah, I saw that. It's a Sixth Street guys.
Yeah, that's Sixth Street Cycles.
Yeah.
So that was really fun because I've been pretty much never gotten into mechanics my whole career. Just kind of let's make sure it works and ride and I can go ride it. You know, that's basically how I've always been. But more recently, I've just gotten into it. I think it's just so much, so interesting how it all works and to build something myself. So spent some time there and yeah, I just took some time off, been playing a lot of music. Actually, I play bass.
Okay.
My brother and I play together and played some shows and stuff. So that's been really fun. Something different, you know, the season's so long and it's good to just kind of do something different and just reset a little bit. But
yeah. What, how'd you get hooked up with those guys in New York?
I was doing a photo shoot for this thing and
GQ.
No.
No. Have a comedy dude.
No way, man. come on, man. No, but this guy was just I was going on about this Triumph that I had done another shoot on.
Yeah.
And I had so much fun riding this old 60s Triumph. I'm a big fan of Steve McQueen, so whatever he was riding, I love, you know. And this guy was like, "You got to go to this shop in New York." So I actually tried to go there in the summer, but they weren't there. And then this time they were. So it was cool.
There's a little short track by me in New York. And I think some of those guys go up there, but I know one of the kids, there's a kid that races flat track and AFT from up by me. And he's part of their crew.
Yeah,
I forget his name, but either way, yeah, it's pretty neat. I didn't even know they were in the city. Honestly, I didn't know where they were.
Yeah, you gotta go check them out, man. Next time you're in the city,
yeah,
it's so sick. They just have pictures of dirt trackers all over the walls, and he's built tons of engines for people, and he's a big this guy Hugh. He's a big dirt track fan. So
really,
yeah,
that's cool. That's crazy that I haven't heard of him.
It's funny. There's those little underground kind of
yeah,
niche.
Mm-hmm.
people that are into that kind of stuff. But it's weird to hear about it in like New York City, because you don't really think like New York City is going to have anything motorcycle related. And if it is, it's kind of like a little bit cheesy.
Yeah, man. It was sick. This engine just came in this box. Like, I don't know where this engine came from. It was dirty as hell. And I spent like 3 days just down in their like basement. Basically, they have like a parts washer down there, just all day just working. And
I was, you just doing?
Yeah, me. I was cleaning all of it. Yeah, man. It was hilarious. You were there
building the bike.
I built the whole thing. Yeah.
Holy crap.
Did it run when you were done or no?
Yeah. Huh?
Did it run?
I don't know yet. I gotta see. I hope it does. But I was joking with my friend. I'm like, man, I'm basically paying to have a 9-to-5 right now. I've never had a 9-to-5 in my life, and this is what it feels like. Yeah. Wake up in the morning, get my coffee, bagel, walk over to the shop. I work till 6 o'clock, get off work, go, you know, hang out with my buddy, go out or grab a drink or something, you know.
We're hiring back at the dealership in New York. Yeah, so if the racing thing don't work out, dude, we got a spot for you.
Sick. Perfect. Glad to know.
That's cool though. You said you're playing some music with your brother. You got three brothers?
Three brothers, yeah.
Three. I knew the other two. I didn't know you had a third one, like, until I started doing a little bit of research on you. I was doing a little background check.
Yeah, I have three brothers. We're all like three of us are all 1 year apart, which is kind of funny. Never thought about that until I was older, how crazy it was that. Yeah.
That is crazy.
Imagine being a parent, having a kid, just knocking them out one after another.
Yeah. No, my mom did it. But my oldest brother's like 4 years older than me. So we're all like really close and each other's best friends and stuff. So
that's cool.
Yeah, it's nice.
You're the middle?
Middle youngest. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. So which one plays the bass?
I play bass. My younger brother is like, I'm playing his music. So he like writes everything and plays guitar mainly, but can play anything.
You're just slapping the bass around,
dude.
Just taking it for a walk.
I haven't got my slap technique down yet. I'm working on it.
Slap the bass, man.
Yeah, I'm really working on it.
Right.
But yeah, I've always been such a big lover of music, and especially like really into like old style music, you know, like Britpop, like the 80s music, and yeah, so I don't know. I always loved playing bass and stuff.
Yeah, that's cool. Are your parents both British?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's cool. When did they move here?
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
what? They're both British.
What?
Yeah, I'm like first generation American.
No way.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I was the first of my like brothers to be born.
Oh, so they were all born in England.
My two older brothers were born in England, and me and my younger brother.
Where at?
In Malibu. I was born. Oh, where were my parents from? So my mom is from like Bath.
Okay.
Yeah, like Bristol area.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad is from like South London.
Okay.
Yeah.
So. Geezer.
Yeah. So no, he doesn't really have that accent.
No, I know.
He's pretty proper. He's pretty proper the way he speaks. But yeah, it's funny. I've always had that kind of roots there. I always felt a real strong connection with England, and anytime we race there.
It's so, kind of funny because everyone thinks you're like the Cali kid, but then you have like the know, English man. Thing going on.
That is
on.
Wild, yeah.
Kept it a like, secret up until now. Oh boy,
we're dropping stuff on the pod.
How did they end up in Malibu?
My dad is in like the, my grandfather had this like camera, or it's like a robotic camera thing he designed. It's like called motion control, like special effects stuff. So
okay,
my dad was like in the movie industry a little bit with commercial stuff too, and took the company from England to America, and
that's the camera control.
That's why my dad is in America.
Mm.
I think he was supposed to come and just like help start the company. And they're like, yeah, just go over there for a couple weeks and help get it going.
Never let
go. And then my dad was like, for a little bit. I don't
Could
think
you
I'm
imagine
leaving.
Joe Roberts just like wasn't born in America and just like, cheerio, mate.
Hello, yeah, hello. Full Brit. Yeah, it would be funny. Tea. I still drink tea. So.
Do you? What kind of tea?
Earl Grey, man. English,
really?
English breakfast.
No way. Earl Grey.
Yeah.
I'm more of a TP Tips guy.
Well, I can mess with that too.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I mean,
our next door neighbor Simon, he's always got that.
Oh, that's all he has.
Yeah.
Actually,
since I've moved to Europe, I never was like crazy about coffee, but I remember I was testing at this track in Spain called Almeria, You probably know it.
Yeah, Shag's Tires.
Yeah,
like, Shag's Tires.
I don't like that track at all. I think it's terrible.
It's just Shag's Tires, man.
Terrible shit track. But it's in the middle of nowhere, too, so...
It's where Tito did all of his stuff, right?
Yeah, it's where Rabat? He, like, lived.
Dude, yeah. Yeah.
But I remember I was there, and it got rained out, and, of course, this track, you can't ride in the rain. It's too slippery or something. And I think that was the reason, but my teammate I had at the time... He's like, oh, mate, let's go grab a coffee. And I just didn't really drink coffee. And all of a sudden, I have this, like, cafe con leche. And it was just, like, the best thing ever. I had, like, five. Yeah. I went back to the box.
Sounds like James.
Just, like, addicted to coffee. So, yeah.
First time I went to Cartagena, it was, like, the same thing.
Really?
Yeah, I was, like, Spanish.
They just love coffee there.
Oh, it's great. And then the first time I went to Italy, like, you get the, like, mud. It's so good.
Yeah.
You just rip.
Well, my team is funny. We have like a coffee machine. I think they told me how much they spend on Nespresso a year. It's a big part of the budget.
Number? What's the number?
I don't even. It's upwards. It's up there.
It's up there.
It's like 15, over 15, I think.
What? Oh,
something insane.
I can imagine. I mean,
they started giving us coffee machines. We use it so much, and I mean, dude, they just like. They have so many coffees a day, and they'll watch me make my coffee, and I'll fill it like the little espresso shot all the way to the top. they're like, what the hell are you doing? What is that? What are you doing? You know, they're like, it has to be like that tiny, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you're so American with your Starbucks, you
right?
know?
Yeah. Shit coffee.
Exactly.
I know, man. It's crazy. The little time I spent in Europe, it was very like that. And it got me to be more of a coffee snob myself. I mean, I got hooked on tea pretty good. But it's interesting just traveling around and seeing the different cultures. Like from, you know, living in America and then you go over there and you're kind of by yourself, right? Like we talked about it a little bit, just being over there. And you're like, man, like it's a lot different. Like even being in England where... You know, they speak English and it's pretty easy to get around except for they drive on the wrong side of the road. But it's like, it's quite, you know, depressing at sometimes being over there by yourself.
Yeah.
Like, I got no friends.
No, I know, man. Honestly, I had that for a while. I mean, even still, I feel like I don't connect totally with everybody over there. A bit more on my, I have like a little group of people that I hang out with. I mean, Cam being over there and Cam Gish too. That was nice just to have that kind of fellow American to like hang out with. That was really cool. And also my buddy who traveled with me, Keaton, I had that last year and that was great to have him there. So,
and you guys were you guys like doing a ton of stuff in Andorra for a bit?
No, I never did the Andorra thing. I've Portugal, gone a couple times. Weren't I was you? In yeah I'm darting all over the place, man.
It's all right.
Yeah,
that's what we're here to do.
Yeah, but yeah, I don't know, I lived in Barcelona for a while and I think Barcelona's sick because like for the first years you get over there, I think it's important to just see that whole culture until you get sick of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Until you can't get into any restaurant, until you can't do anything.
Yeah, I don't know. But I think it's really cool, the culture and how much they love MotoGP. I mean, that's like here it's motocross, there it's road racing. You know, motocross is like second to the road stuff, which is so interesting.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And like, even just being in England, I know this is pretty far away, but like going into pubs and seeing like Taiko Suzuki or Paul Bird or, you know, like you don't see that going into a restaurant here, but like going over there and going into those restaurants, pubs or whatever, and everybody's talking bikes. You know, it's Superbike Sunday. It's not NFL Sunday. Yeah, I mean, football's huge, but it's pretty cool, the culture. Everybody rides to the track, and obviously the weather's so shitty in England that whenever they get a break, you know, and it's nice, everybody comes out.
Yeah.
You know, everyone. So, like, Brands Hatch just being so full of fans and whatnot and racing in front of that is just, it's pretty, it's just a lot different.
Yeah. You know? No, that's always
something. Like we're spoiled here for sure.
Yeah. With the BSB stuff, I think I've been maybe to a BSB race once. Or it was World Superbike at Donington. I can't remember, but yeah, the fans. No, I did. I went to Brands Hatch one time, and the fans there. I was like so surprised.
It's packed.
Yeah,
it's wild.
It was sick. It was so cool to see. But no, the passion there is huge, man. You just see it. I mean, some places like in Misano, there's so many restaurants that are just filled with like bike fairings.
What's
you know?
Like your What's your craziest European story so far from like a fan perspective?
Have
you had anything like crazy happen to you?
Dude, I mean, I had some stuff like Barcelona. I had like this. I've had a couple times now. Girls coming up to me,
of course,
with but they have my name tattooed on them.
What?
Yeah, no but not way. Just mine. There's like other riders too. Sure. Fabio's on there. Yeah. But it was crazy. It was crazy, man. I just was like, you actually did that? Yeah. You know? I mean,
did you ever get one signed and then they get it tattooed?
I don't know. I signed some stuff, but
we'll
see this year maybe. Yeah, some stuff.
What kind of stuff are we talking about?
Well, a couple of Talladega Nights type thing. You know? Okay. All right.
It's a different world, man.
Yeah.
It's wild. Or like Le Mans, like the bikes on the limiters for like 4 days straight.
Yeah.
Like when I was with JP, we went to Le Mans 24 hour and like, it's a Wednesday, bro. And they're just like, and it's like, it's 5 a.m. I'm like, dog.
I know, man. I think I was in Aragon and I was staying in the town there, Alcaniz. And man, that track, that little tiny, it's a little tiny town in the middle of nowhere. And that place comes alive during the GP. And one time, I can't remember if I was racing the GP or just going to see it. I think I was racing it. I was staying in the hotel like right at the square. Biggest mistake I've ever made, man. I mean, it was just like all over the place, crazy noise. And I remember for a while after that, I was so sick of it. And then when 2020 came along and it was just nothing, silence, I was like, man, this sucks, you know, without all the people there. So now when I hear it, I'm like stoked. I'm like, yeah, they're all back. You know, that's sick. But
I was talking to Cam. Do you stay at the track too? You know, this year he got like a camper at the track and he's like,
yeah, Cam got that for me because he started coming around looking at mine and stuff. He's like, oh, this is pretty nice. Just staying here, you know?
Yeah. I can't even imagine leaving the track every night.
Yeah.
In those crowds. And then like, I get up pretty late. I would be showing up late, missing practice, stuck in traffic.
They have two different sizes. Like you can get the bigger one or the like single one. Mm-hmm. And Cam was asking me, he's like, "What do you think? Should I get the single or the bigger one?" I was like, "Dude, you only need the small one." But I was totally angling to just have. There was one big one left, and I was like, just angling for me to get it. I was like, "Dude, you only need the small one, man." He's like, "Yeah, you're right. You're right."
So how does that work? They tow the same thing around the whole country for you?
Yeah,
European rounds, right?
Yeah, it's just like anything. I mean, the trailers it's just so many trailers being towed around everywhere. But
is
it's
it
only
a GP room, or is it
a GP room?
Okay, yeah, because I remember Brad when we went like the year before his factory, we were staying in hotels, right? And like at Mugello, you're staying like 4 miles away, and it's just like it's crazy. Like there are these little hotels. There's like the smallest bed. It's like the size of this couch. It's nothing great. And then the year he got factory with KTM, we're in GP rooms, right? But he still had a hotel, but he stayed at the GP room. And I was like, it's way crazy because like Mugello is like one way in, one way out. Mm. So it's like super hard to get to the track. And it's like insane. Like if you're late, like you're fucked.
Yeah.
Like, dude, FP1's rolling, bro.
They're not waiting, dude.
Not
waiting.
Yeah. No, that's true. I mean, there's that. Like when the crowds are so intense, I mean, it's just a level of stress that is eliminated. You know, you're already at the track, you don't have to think about it. And it kind of reminds me when I was a kid and going to the track with like a motorhome and, you know, with my dad and stuff. It's a similar feeling. So
yeah,
I've got my little routine. You know, you just wake up, do your thing, go have breakfast at the hospitality, get ready, go see the team, get ready for FP1, you know. So it's nice to be there at the track.
Now, how does that, so you did you do a year in hotels and then get into a GP box? Like, how does that work? Is that just like anything per team? Did you have to work that into your deal to get a debt, or is that on you? Or how does that, because I know the European contracts and stuff like that, it's a little different. It's not quite, you know, hey, we pay for travel, we pay you. It's like, it's kind of somewhat jumbled sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, that's always dependent on like the team you're with, what they're willing. I mean, everyone's got a different contract, different deal, or you know, whatever they're getting. I kind of just worked it in,
good
kind of thing. Or you just offset compared to like what a hotel would cost for the year.
Is it pretty comparable?
I mean, it's a little bit more, but
You're there.
I think it's worth it. Yeah,
for sure. Peace of mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have like a crew? Like Cam was saying, that was kind of like what changed for him when he started to kind of really enjoy it. I know Cam's like a little bit more of a homebody kind of guy. Yeah. So that's a big part of it, is like having people around him that he wants to be around. But and he said he kind of made friends with like Jake and a few of those guys. You have like a kind of a clique as well over there for yourself?
Or I wouldn't
just a
one say
man,
that.
You're a one man lone wolf?
I mean, I have like Keaton.
Yeah, the Americans are your buddies.
Yeah, like. Cam too and stuff. But I mean, I don't know. I feel like a little bit maybe different the way I go about things and don't always like relate to a lot of people. So I do kind of my own thing a little bit.
Yeah.
But
what do you mean by that? Like what way?
I don't know. I don't really always want to talk to people at the track, man. You know, you never know what I've had friends at the track before, but, I mean, racing to me is just such like a thing in my head. It's like my own inner battle. You know, I don't need another distraction from, you know, someone else.
Yeah, saying. So you're one of those guys, you just want to go home and think about whatever you got to do and go back to work the next day kind of thing. Not really make friends kind of deal.
Well, I don't know, but I mean, I have friends. I have friends I grew up with, and like, I'm not like a complete loner, but.
I just mean at the racetrack. Like, you're there to do a job and like, you just want to get shit done.
I mean, I'm not an asshole. I'm like friends with people. And like, if I see somebody that is, you know, will wave back, you know, I'll do that type of stuff. But
you're not going to go have a beer with them, is what you're saying.
I mean, it is funny. Like sometimes you'll get like the after parties and you run into riders, and it's always kind of a nice thing just to be like, because I have a lot of respect for everyone I race against,
of course.
You know, just because I think we're all understand each other, what it takes to go through this, you know? So, you know, it is nice in like kind of a relaxed setting to kind of just unwind and be like, hey man, you know, it's good to see you or whatever. Or yeah, that type of thing. I think that's healthy. But when you're in the zone and you're trying to figure out how to get through a weekend and there's so much stuff going on, I just try to direct all my like communication to my team, whatever friendships and all that type of stuff. And maybe it's just my own thing. I don't know. Maybe I can't separate my mind to just be friends with other people. I got to just direct it certain ways, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, I mean, I think that's something that a lot of people have said, like racing has changed over the years, right? Because it used to be like, you know, you wanted to kill the guys you were racing against, not like literally, but like that was like the mindset. And now everyone's kind of gotten to be a little bit more like buddy-buddy. You kind of got your group of people you hang out with. And
yeah. I mean, that can be nice, but also kind of boring sometimes. I think it's interesting to have a bit of that kind of rivalry.
Yeah, for
you
sure.
Know,
for
so
sure.
Who would you say your rival is, like your ultimate? Dude, who's your guy?
Pick like 10 riders on the moto grid, man. I mean, there's so many good ones. It's hard to pick one, honestly.
Did you have you ever got like your first wild card? Where was your first wild card?
Brno,
right? Because that was a stellar, right, in the rain.
Yeah,
that's what like was like. Our homies there.
Yeah,
we're in it, boys. No. But like, did anybody cut you up? Like right off the bat.
Oh, dude.
Yeah, okay. Because I had it pretty gnarly. Like,
yeah.
I did a wild card at Indian.
Yeah.
Like I roll out of pit lane and it was West. Dude just cut me up and I'm like, bro.
No, there's
like it's my first job. It's my first time, dog.
No, like, there's a level of like you gotta earn your spot in the field.
Huh.
You know? Oh yeah.
I think that's huge in that paddock too. I remember the difference like when I in 2020 when I came out of Qatar. You know, the difference that people reacted towards me in the paddock compared to like the years before. I mean, the years before I had little signs of getting the points but I wasn't really doing anything, you know, I mean, just trying to find my way in this class and riding bikes that were like not coming to me, you know, it was difficult to ride. So like 2020, when it started kind of coming a little bit together that, you know, the people that kind of, oh, hey, Joe, how are you doing? Or they wave a little. Everyone's a little bit nicer, you know?
Yeah.
So there is that level thing. I remember in Brno, one thing that was funny. Man, I remember Remy Gardner pulled a move on me that I thought was just like, I was like, okay, that's you know.
Yeah, he's with the big dogs now.
Yeah, he passed me, but he did. He could have passed me a little bit like with more space, and he just took everything.
Dude, they buzz you.
Yeah, but that never bothered me, man. Yeah. I mean, racing in America, I remember 2014, Danny Eslick, all year, man, he would pass me like such an asshole, man. I mean, there was times like in Daytona. I was, you know, in Daytona, you got the white line at the top and like the line is like, stay up as close to the wall as possible. I mean, I wasn't riding the wall just because I'm like, I don't, you know, I don't need to do that. I'm riding a Honda that's 10 miles an hour slower. Let me just get through this week. But I remember Danny, I was like pretty close to the wall. And dude, he goes around the outside of me, like, I mean, centimeters from me, man. It was the craziest thing ever.
Dude, that's so slick though.
Yeah, it is totally him. You know, it's like maybe that dirt track thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
But I respect that, honestly. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's cool.
That's wild. I think we talk about it, it's like when we go back to Bruno and we see, like, I think it's like the, it's like a confidence thing that you're not, like, nothing changes, but like, I don't know, like the aurora around you, like people are a little bit more like, whoa, like this guy is somebody, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know how to say it, but it's like when you make that, or if you do something to, you know, one of the big dogs, you make a pass or something that's good, but yeah, hard, you know, I feel like people just like, it rattles through the paddock.
Yeah.
You know, and it's crazy. Like, my next question for you is, like, how hard is it? You know what I mean? Like, I had my, like, one wild card, and it's hard. But, like, you're on pretty good bikes and stuff like that, and it's still, like, super hard. But, like, how hard is it?
Yeah, I think it's a question that, like, people are always trying to figure out, you know, especially coming, like, the riders from here, always trying to figure out what, how hard is it? And it's really difficult to gauge, you know, because there's no real reference. In a way, the bikes are way different. The mm-hmm. tires are different. The tracks are different. So it's just kind of like a yeah, you got to take a leap of faith when you go over there and just hope that it, you know, believe in yourself and just know you can try to come out and you are a good rider, you know, but yeah. It is difficult. I mean, the things that I think throw you is just like your own inner mental battle. You know, if you didn't have a good session, maybe over here it'd be like top five, top seven. Over there, it's like you see yourself out of the, you know, the transfer position into Q2 and you're like, this is a shit weekend, you know? Yeah. Or you're not on the camera anymore. You know, there, it's just, it's cutthroat, but you're racing against the best. There's no excuses, man. You gotta either do it or don't. You gotta make it happen. So
when do you think you realized like you could actually, like, you belong there? Was there ever a doubt for you? Or
yeah,
you,
totally,
you knew all
man.
The time?
No, I had doubts a lot. I mean, I remember 2019 when I was riding the KTM. I was like, "Am I even good enough to do this? You know, is this what I should be doing?"
Was there like a moment though that then that like flipped and you were like, "Okay, like I'm."
Yeah, I remember going into the off season 2019 to 20, and I was like, I was lost. I didn't know what I was going to do. I was thankful I had the Calyx going into the next season, you know, a new bike, same bike as what all the top guys were on. Felt confident with the crew chief I had that year, felt confident with John Hopkins, who I was working with. He was kind of he helped me kind of boost myself up. Honestly, if I think about it, I really like John a lot. I think we had a really good relationship and still do, but at that time we were working together. It kind of, yeah, it really helped. I went to Qatar for the test and I didn't really have any expectations. I just was, let's just see what happens. And that track to me is just always fast and flowing stuff. Has always spoke to me a little bit. There's a sector, like sector 3 at Qatar. It's just those fast rights. Mm-hmm. That stuff just speaks to me so much. And I think I finished top 10 in the test.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, okay, that's cool. That's something new, you know? And I started to like feel that little energy inside of you that's like, you know, that thing you just follow.
Maybe I could do it.
Yeah, I can do this. You know, I can do this. Yeah, and free practice, on the actual race weekend, I free practiced 2. I went out my first run and my crew chief came to me and he said, Joe, your ideal time is a 58.5. And I was like thinking, I was like, what the hell? No way it's 58.5. I mean, that's like almost a track. I think I was like the track record or something. Like, there's no way. He's like, just, I'm putting new tires on. Just go for it. And I remember just putting a lap together and I set the lap record and I was like, holy shit, I can, you know, this yeah. is insane. And I just carried that. I mean, I've just always carried that feeling that I know I can still do it yeah. and have that within me.
Was there something in like that off season that you were doing differently other than like
mindset? I don't think so. No, I mean, before 2020.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I think I was the most lost I've ever been, like training wise. I'd had like crazy structured training through my whole career up until that point. And that year it was just like, I don't know, just, yeah, obviously I was training and riding and stuff, but I always do, but it wasn't like super focused on any point. Maybe that was the good thing. I got on my own head, you know?
Yeah, for
just,
sure.
And just did what you're able to do.
Yeah.
You know, I think sometimes that's, you know, it happens. You just like, you don't do what you're like bred to do, like your talent. It's not second nature. You know, it's, you know, it gets a little tough, but yeah, I remember seeing that. And I think, you know, all of America, I think, was like, just, you know, like you've got your one or two guys. Like,
everybody wants a horse in the race.
Well, it's like, I mean, and it's America, you know what I mean? We're like, we're a huge country and we're great at everything. Yeah. And it's like, we've been a little lost in there. And it's, I think it's tough when you only have like one guy, whereas if Spaniards or Italians, there's so many, you know, like if, you know, Bastianini at the time doesn't do it, we've got six other guys that can do it. Yeah. You know, we've got you, Cam at once, and, you know, a few other guys in our whole, you know, time. So it's like, well, I remember when we saw that and, you know, just seeing everybody just get right behind the boy and was like, yeah, let's go. And I mean, does the social media help you too? Or is it a distraction?
Oh, I think it goes hand in hand. I mean, it's both, you know, it can be your, like, a good friend, or it can be your worst enemy, man. I mean, I think, I remember that weekend, especially when I like qualified on pole, I couldn't sleep that night because I just knew how big a deal it was that this had happened, you know, and I could just feel the energy around the world that was like, okay, there's a possibility we could win. I think I was a little nervous that weekend.
I would hope in the race. I don't think like,
be. What's it like being on the grid, like your first pole, like lap record, like just out of kind of nowhere? Right,
dude, butterflies were everywhere. I mean, I had my dad next to me, which was great, and my crew chief, the crew chief I had at the time was very good at like diffusing my own head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he kind of was very good at just talking to me like jokingly and getting me out of my own way, and I think that helped a lot. The thing about that race, though, there was kind of a question about the soft tire. Some were like working, and some not. It was weird. Because some riders in that race just dropped way back and had issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so we opted to go for a hard tire, which I hadn't used all weekend. And I remember kind of having a bit of like doubts about it. But I mean, it was still a great, great race, man. Got up in the front and battling.
It was unreal.
Yeah. But
obviously you said working with Hopper was a big thing. Like what did he bring to the table for you? Like what was the big, I know he's like, I read his book. You know, and I've always obviously been a fan just because he's, you know, a legend. But from somebody who like doesn't really know him personally, like to read some of the stuff that he worked on and like what made him so great was kind of interesting because it was a little bit different, I think, than most racers' mindsets and like their approach. So I'm kind of curious, like what was that for you?
Well, it's funny with John because I always felt kind of a connection with him since I was a kid. You know, watching that movie Faster that he was in and. Kind of seen his upbringing. He had British parents too, and similar upbringing, same tracks, Southern California, and similar riding stuff too. I mean,
so you rode flat track growing up, supermoto flat track, and then
I did. Yeah, I think he was more like motocross and stuff, but we rode the same road race tracks, like Apex and or Adams and Apex too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, he was just so positive and. It was kind of just like he gave the impression was like, without a doubt, you can do this. There was no like doubts, whatever. You know, it was just like, yeah, what do you mean? I've seen you ride. You can do this.
Almost like a shield, maybe.
Yeah. And it just felt like something I hadn't had forever. I was in environments that felt a little bit more antagonistic and more cold. You know, there wasn't such like a person that was like I really could connect with. And his own background, I respected a lot. Just I always, you know, he was one of the Americans like Nicky and Colin that I idolized, you know, so to have him in my corner felt like an extra motivation. Some of the best races I had that year was just me and him beforehand, just shooting the shit about, you know, random stuff. Didn't even have anything to do with racing.
Yeah.
So it was more than just the racing connection. It's just as a person too. So
do you have a coach now that you're working with, or like a, you know, like a mentor type of person? Obviously you're not working with John anymore, I don't think, right?
No, I right now, no, I don't. It's more just on my like own thing. But I have like the team I'm in right now, the Italtrans team. I mean, they're like just such like nice, supportive people. You know, there's times I've like crashed out of the lead or things like that. And they're not, any other team would just be so livid. You know, I was coming in expecting like things to be thrown and it was not the case. You know, Le Mans 2021, I was in second and had such good pace. I was catching, I think I could have just passed Bezzecchi the next corner, but he kind of broke a little bit sooner than I thought and I almost ran into the back of him, so that I crashed. And I was livid, so pissed at myself that I did it. And the team was just so understanding. And they saw it more as like a positive thing that, oh yeah, Joe can do this. You know, he's running up front. So that was that. That's something that's been really cool about this team, you know?
That's awesome.
Now, going on to that, like sometimes we see like, you know, like a lot of crashes just kind of out of nowhere, you know, or tuck in the front and stuff like that. And is that because we're so on the limit? Or is it like a certain lean angle? But like we see a lot of mistakes just like kind of out of nowhere. Whereas you know, as a fan watching, you're like, wow, like how did that just happen?
Yeah.
Is that just because like it's on the limit for 45 minutes or whatever, 38 minutes, and you're literally, everybody's just on this limit? Or what is that? Is there a feeling thing? Are the bikes, I mean, when I rode it, there was a lot of chatter. I'm sure they're so much better now, but like yeah. What is, can you give us any input on like how the bike, you know, reacts like that? Is there a lot of feel out of the Moto2 bike, or is it kind of like you're just sending it?
I wouldn't say that. I would say they're kind of difficult bikes to really ride super, super well. There's like a pocket, I think, at least for me, that I find when I enter that window, I can do like really good things.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they can be like a little bit difficult, you know? I mean, Barcelona this year, I was probably the most confident I'd been all year. I'd like led sessions that weekend, qualified third, and I took off in the race. I was like 4 seconds in the lead.
Checked out.
And I felt so confident, you know? And I remember just thinking like, okay, keep 44.8. That's the pace. And I was monitoring it with my board and seeing I was like making gaps. And but the thing was, is it was getting hot and the tire was overheating and I didn't think about it, you know. I mean, I thought about it, but I didn't really like take it into such big consideration that mm-hmm. I needed to back it off a little bit. And yeah, I just made a little mistake. It gave me a warning like a lap before that the front was starting to move. And I was just so like content on just keeping 44.8, you know, because it's weird how easy it is to do that on a Moto2 bike to keep the same 10th.
Really?
Yeah, it's so weird. It feels like I can't do anything different. And this, you know, it works in your favor and against you too, because when you're trying to go quicker, you're like, shit, I can't go any quicker, you know, so it's the same lap time. But then if you're trying to keep pace too, it's weird how you just can do this, feels like the same thing. I think I did like maybe 7:44.7s, and you know, it's weird. But yeah, the fronts can just be a little bit tricky sometimes and just kind of close on you.
Cam was saying that about the chassis are so stiff that they put so much force through the tires.
Yeah.
Dunlop has made those tires like super stiff to handle the load. And so
yeah.
They have a tendency to, you know, tracks, especially like when it's colder, when you go to a side of the tire that you're not using a lot, the tendency to fall because of that and those kinds of things. You had a lot of experience with that too.
Yeah, well, the thing is compared to like Michelin or something like that, Dunlop's pretty limited on the compounds because they have to make a tire that can like work for every type of track. I mean, you got different, you'd have different abrasions on all sorts of tracks, different weather, temperatures and stuff like that. So sometimes they work great and sometimes maybe that allocation isn't like perfect, you know, so it takes like a lot of rider, you know, riding skill to work
understand,
with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And understand it. And, yeah, but it is true. Yeah. Sometimes they don't feel as good as, and it could be the same compound, but it just doesn't feel as good as the day before or, you know, a different track.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was going to say, and you're only allowed so many tires per, like you can't just go in if you get like six front, six rears, you can't just get the same compound six and six, right? You get like three hards, three softs or whatever it is per weekend.
Yeah. So like normally the allocation is the tire that they know that nobody's going to use, they'll do less. So it'd be depending on the track. Some tracks, they split it evenly because it's like there could be a chance you want to use the soft or the hard. But tracks that are like obvious that you're going to use the soft, they'll do maybe five, like number twos, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll do three number threes. But you know you're just going to use...
So strategy and all that comes into play a little bit.
Yeah, and the front tires too, you have five of each, like three and two. I always use a harder front tire. A lot of riders do, except for Phillip Island, we use the soft one. But yeah, you try to just structure it. I mean, free practice one, you always just use your least desirable tire and just get used to the track mm-hmm. again, kind of see all your points where you get to know it again.
Yeah, no.
You know?
And I mean... Like, I don't want to jump back, but going to, like, you say, when you get into that pocket and you can do those, like, 44.8s and whatnot the whole time, is it physical? Like, are you, is it, I mean, obviously it's physical, but, you know, how physical is it?
I mean, depends on the circuit. I mean, Coda is so physical that those switchbacks that you got in that first sector, or maybe it's the second sector, those are so physical. And, like, race, like lap after lap after lap, I mean, you're just, yes, I mean, it gets to you after a while, but it just depends on the track. I mean, I think it's down to your fitness, you know, how fit you are. But
do you get arm pump?
I actually don't ever get arm pump. I've never had the surgery or anything.
Okay.
Just the way I ride, I always ride like my fingers basically. I don't know, I just never had that kind of grip thing.
How much of it do you think comes down to fitness?
I would say a good amount.
Yeah.
That plays into like how mentally fatigued you get too.
For me, that's like the biggest thing, is kind of knowing. It's not so much even out there like being physically fit. It's more so knowing that you're potentially more fit than the guy next to you.
Yeah. Thing, I think mentally it's like a huge thing. Knowing you're prepared and ready for the weekend, you eliminate all variables, you know, but and being fit.
Do you think it's like a fitness like cardio, or do you think bike fit is more in that sort of championship, or do you think you need to have like a good combination?
I mean, honestly, looking at like what the whole field does is just ride motorcycles constantly.
Constantly.
I mean, the whole VR46, I don't even ever see them riding bicycles.
I know.
No, I don't think they're
all
do.
They're
it's
doing
crazy.
Is just riding motorcycles, which I think I'm more kind of inclined to do now. Yeah, that's kind of my mentality right now. It's just like ride. Because I think that's brings on more of the, it's like hard to like focus on the muscles that are needed because it's just such a specific type of sport. I've gone to like gyms before where they're like, so what muscles do you use for this? And I'm like, well, almost everything.
Well, you need to have strong, you need to have strong forearms. Like, dude, no.
Yeah, exactly. No.
Yeah.
You know, like you can't be holding those like grip things because that just like mess up your forearms and stuff. So
I see you work out at the Red Bull place in LA. What is that like?
That's great. I mean, they understand the sport really well and they have a whole section facility like mental performance and stuff like that, which has been really helpful. And yeah, just like top trainers. Yeah, being with Red Bull has helped a lot for that too, the training side.
It's pretty cool. I mean, I feel like you were a Red Bull rookie, so you kind of know that was like younger, but like growing up and being like a true Red Bull athlete's like as a you know, racer or anybody that's in this kind of stuff is like, that's like a, you know, box to check for sure.
Yeah, it's like full circle for me. Like they kind of showed me Europe with the Red Bull Rookies Cup, so it's pretty sick to be back with them. And I always wanted to be with Red Bull. So, yeah, it's really cool to be with them. And they just, like, really care about their athletes, you know?
Yeah, no, it's cool. I mean, it's honestly amazing. What, like, it's an energy drink company, like, all the stuff that they do outside of that. I don't think a lot of people realize, you know, how much they actually invest in the athletes and stuff.
Yeah, so helpful with, like, videos you want to do. Or, I mean, like, the actual thing to help you become a better athlete, which is, like, their whole, they call it APC.
Mm-hmm.
The Athlete Performance Center. I mean, that just is like such a huge help. I've met so many other Red Bull athletes at that place, and it's kind of, that's another thing that's pretty cool to like meet them.
Yeah, you're kind of in like an elite,
elite
squad.
Yeah, elite squad.
It's like the X-Men.
Yeah.
Are you on any sort of diet restrictions? Like, I know, we know back when the Hondas, they're a little bit slower, and you know, there was a weight limit and whatnot. Is there is there a certain weight you look to go into the season to be lighter, is faster, or there's a certain weight that you feel comfortable that, you know, traveling the world, getting sick has to be a huge variable.
Yeah.
Pasta in Italy. Italian team.
Go fast to eat pasta.
No, dude, there is. I mean, I'm like on the taller side for Moto 2. You know, I'm like almost 6 foot. So, I mean, it's like weight for me is so important. I try to be around like 69 kilos, but the weight like cap, I think the perfect weight is 65 kilos. I do it in kilos just because I've been over there for so long. What I know, I think it's
72. I think it's like 163 or something, 164.
Yeah. And I think I always try to be around like 150, 149 basically.
Side subject. I was on the phone with Gerloff the other day.
Oh, dude,
men's health.
First of all, men's health figure. But he's like, yeah, dude, Christmas is brutal. I've been on this diet, like, you know, I'm at like 160. I'm trying to get down to 145. All I've been doing is eating meat.
Yeah, dude, I've been hanging out with him a lot actually when I was living in Spain, and he's on this like whole. I think he's super into the whole carnivore.
Oh, MD, he is,
dude.
Oh,
getting into all of that and like.
That's my dad. My dad's into that big.
Really? Yeah, I thought you said that was your dad.
No. No. Big Phil's been in. He's been eating meat with maple syrup and papayas and like, and then he's like, man, I got to get into surfing because, you know, I'm not burning enough to eat the fruit. So,
yeah, or like Liver King.
Dude, that guy's a fraud, right?
Yeah, I think he's a fraud.
Well, yeah.
He's on steroids.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was doing like 10 grand worth of steroids a month. Dude, he was like, and my favorite is all these memes are, you know, whatever, the guys going, yeah, no, I'm natural. No, I don't take it. And then everyone's just lighting him up.
Dude, so funny. Yeah, that's Gerloff without the steroids. But he's into all that eating meat, you know?
Yeah. No, but it's crazy. I mean, I'm 6'4". I can't even imagine like... I weigh 165, which I couldn't lose weight. I don't think if I tried, I can't imagine like for you, same thing. It's probably pretty difficult to get any lighter than you are.
Well, I've had like trouble sleeping sometimes too. I've gone like crazy. Like I did this whole like during 2020, I'd like when we'd come back from all the sitting around for those 3 months, I weighed like so much going into Jerez and I had two terrible weekends. I mean, I did terrible. I was like 16th or something. And between, it was like Jerez and Brno. And I was like, this isn't happening. Brno is like my track. I'm going to like change this. And I went on this, I was like living in the Spanish mountains.
Like, smoking like, cigarettes.
Rocky. He's got Rocky. He's just literally has stones. He's just.
Dude, it was crazy. I went into this whole thing. I was like, I'm not eating dinner till Brno. Like I'm not eating any dinner. Just and fasting. I would wake up and I'd do. Like a 2-hour walk in the mountains or something, or I'd run it with Edgar Pons. I was staying with him. And then at the end of the day, I would have like my little lunch, which was like just salad and chicken. I had like toast and like yogurt for the morning or something. So it wasn't like a no carb thing, but it was like basically I wasn't eating much. And then in the evening, I would do like 2 hours of trials riding in the mountains too. And I lost like 10 pounds or something crazy, like 12 pounds or something between that race and Brno. And I had a crazy good weekend in Brno too. So
that's it, dude. That's it.
Yeah. So sometimes you just like have to go to the extremes, but
yeah. What's about that track that seems to be a good spot for you?
It's just one of those like tracks that just like fast and flows, just so much flow to it. You know, it's very wide. I can use like these big wide sweeping lines, carry my corner speed that I love so much. Yeah. You know,
where was it that was it Barber that you showed up for the first race here and like you smoked everyone?
Oh, in 2013.
Yeah.
Yeah. We raced each other like a couple weeks before that.
I was going to bring it up. But
yeah. Did you beat me that weekend?
Yeah, I did.
I've been waiting
this whole time.
I think it was a close battle.
It was so close.
Yeah.
I remember him showing up and you were on the Ulrich Honda.
Yeah.
We were at Celtic and I just wadded the thing up over the top of the, we're in the back seat before the long right. I high sided out of there. Do you remember? And I remember you were there and it was like, we were just fucking going back and forth.
Yeah.
And I was like, there's no fucking way I'm letting this guy beat me. Like, because you were young and yeah, I feel like you 15. Just got on a 600. Yeah, I'm like,
that was my first time ever on a 600.
I'm like, dude, no fucking way is this happening. And I remember I just like squeaked it out and Barry Gilson's like, my boy, my boy. I was like the hardest weird race I've ever raced.
Oh, shit.
And you showed up and you're like just turned 16 for your
yeah,
first
that was
race,
my birthday
like two
weekend.
2 days after or something like that. Yeah. Right? Yeah. That's crazy.
See, it helped.
Dude, you helped me, man. You're my reference. You showed me the lines. I did what I did because of you.
Oh, man. Yeah, right.
I'm curious. So, like, 2020 had a lot of momentum, right? And 2021 obviously switched teams. What was the change for you that, you know, it seemed like initially it was a little bit of a different environment or something like that, and things kind of were a little bit more tough again for you. Was that, what was that all about?
What, like the change?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I there were some things I wasn't totally happy with where I was at, and I just wanted something different. And at the time, Italtrans had just won the title, and I thought it was the right move for me, you know, to make that switch to like start winning consistently. I mean, that year didn't really turn out how I thought it was going to for a whole team. But, I mean, we had some decent races and ran up front sometimes, and wasn't like a disaster year, but definitely wasn't my best. But I think I really wanted to be, still want to just be a consistent front runner and learn from to be a really good rider before I'd go up to the big class. You know, I just want to go up to the big class and, you know, figure it out. I wanted to be like a strong top rider and dominant in this Moto 2 to have that feeling. It's almost for myself to be like confident going into MotoGP.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, to feel that I would like perform well there, because you're going up against Marquez. You're going up against the best of the whatever Moto 2 has to offer. So if I'm not the best in Moto 2, you know, it's like,
yeah. Do you think there is? What was the biggest struggle about that transition to Italtrans? Was there a struggle, or just taking time for you to get settled in?
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's different things, like they're an all Italian team, you know, they speak Italian and stuff. So there was that.
Do you speak Italian?
I don't know.
I remember you on the thing, you were trying to learn it, right?
Yeah.
Duolingo?
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's me right now. It's Spanish. Like,
really?
46 days, I'm going strong, boys. But is it hard in the box when you don't understand the language?
At first it was. It's gotten a lot better. And a lot of people there speak English too. And having like someone with me like Keaton has been really helpful too. Like a fellow American.
Does he speak Italian or no?
No, he doesn't. But it's nice to just have somebody there.
100%. Yeah, for you.
It makes you feel like you're not crazy if they don't get what you're saying.
I mean, there is that. I mean, the language barrier is a difficult aspect to it. But I mean, like I said, I think the team knows how to win. I know how to win. So... It's just a matter of it all coming together, which I think this year we've got a good shot at that.
Now, going from like a Kalix to a Kalix, is there much different? Do you notice a big difference between the two teams?
Yeah.
Or like, are they different chassis, or are they identical?
No, the chassis is the same, but the way that they're set up is a little bit different. Different approach to it, basically. So yeah, there are differences, but...
And you can't change, like, electronically, how much can you change? Are they still locked down? I know the Triumph, they're allowed to do, like, a little bit of TC and some EBC strategies and stuff. No, do you get crazy with that or no?
No TC. Okay. You're only allowed torque management.
Okay.
So basically, it's just, like, having a softer map.
Okay.
So it's, yeah, you just open the throttle. It's, like, just delayed the opening of the throttle, basically, which can be helpful in, like, the rain. Or maybe on tracks that are a little slippery.
Are you full power? I mean, we don't want to get into your setup and stuff, but like...
No, I don't care.
Is it full stick all the time or...
Yeah, I normally keep like a one-to-one, call it. Just full power.
Yeah.
Sometimes I like having a little bit, like a softer thing. If it's maybe like a track that the first touch, like the edge grip's not there.
Mm-hmm.
I like having a little bit softer just because it kind of helps that first part not to step out too much. You kind of just have it a little bit softer, but I think the main thing that's huge is engine brake. That plays a huge deal in like how well the bike stops, getting it positioned for the corner. That's a big deal.
And have you seen a transition from, you've been in there 3 years? Four? Is this your fourth year?
No, it's like my sixth year.
Okay, cool, because I know what I'm talking about. I did a lot of research. But 6 years, have you seen a big transition in style change? Like, because when they started, it was full lock back in, getting in, parking, going. Now it's wheels have kind of come back in line a little bit. But we're starting to see a lot of, like, manageable slides on exits and pushing that boundaries. Has there been a huge style change during your 6 years that you've had to grasp, or have you feel like you've kind of obviously you've adapted a little bit, but have you had to make a style change?
No, for sure. I mean, like, when I got there, it was still the Honda engines.
Yeah.
And you didn't have, like, auto blip or anything. You just had, like, quick shifter. And
they were
like
slow?
A slipper clutch. It felt, no, they weren't that slow, honestly, but it felt more like a supermoto bike. You know, when you downshift, you just like pull it in, let the thing just back it in. I thought it was more spectacular in a way.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the bikes now are cool. They have more power, which is kind of nice. It changes a little bit the way you approach the corner, less, you know, less lean angle, less like a 250 is like the reference, I feel like.
Okay.
You know, two stroke kind of thing. It's more in line with like super bike or more power. Okay. You know, like when you ride a bike with more power, you almost like make a V out of the corner.
So maybe it's helping to get to MotoGP a little bit, or do you think it's
in that direction? Yeah.
Yeah. But the jump's got to be so crazy. Yeah.
No, I've talked to riders that made the jump and they're like, it's a whole different world.
Could you imagine being a Moto 3 guy and jumping like
to MotoGP?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that sounds nuts.
Like there's only what, Jack Miller and Darren Bender are.
Yeah.
Those are the two. I mean, I think he did a couple Moto 2s and whatnot, but like that seems crazy.
Yeah, no, it does.
I know it's a hot subject, or at least it was, but like, talk us through the whole process of making that decision on the Aprilia thing. I don't know, I assume that's true, but
yeah, know. No, it was for sure. I mean, when that came about, I think it's kind of an interesting point. I was already signed to Taltrans, and it was the last race of the year that they approached me. So there's a lot of conflict in my own head because I was already signed to a team and didn't morally feel right to just be like, you know, and there was a lot of questions in my head, like why it took so long to come to me at that point, you know, felt very last minute and that put me on edge a little bit.
Kind of like a last resort type of thing.
Maybe a little, I don't know if it was like that. I mean, I think it was just maybe bad planning with the whole Yannone thing and then not securing somebody early enough, like a rider they wanted. I mean, looking at it, it's so many ifs and buts of what could have been. I mean, if you look at what happened, I mean, they got Vinales, they were angling for him. So I don't know where I would have fallen. I mean, I know I would have done well on the bike, but for my own thing, it was just like, I wanted to win, you know, and I had become so close that year in Moto 2, you know, and hadn't won a race since Moto America days. So it felt like I was finally getting a grasp on this thing. And this, you know, Aprilia thing had come on really late. And it just felt like, no, I believe in myself. I know I'll get to MotoGP. You know, I know I'll make it happen. I don't need to take this last minute thing that, yeah, on paper it looks really good. And the bike ended up being a really great bike, of course. But I can't be upset with myself. You know, it was out of anything selfish. It was out of like self-belief and like being like, I know I can win. You know, if it was like being selfish and made the wrong decision or right decision, you know, I don't know. I just
felt a point afterwards you like looked back at it and you were like, you know, especially once I started doing well, you were like, I wonder what I could have done on it.
Oh, for sure, man. I'm not like stupid. I'm not crazy. Yeah, you know, of course. I was like, oh man, that bike's doing great. I'm out of shit race. You know, that sucks. But you got to just keep going. You know, what am I going to do?
But like, so you didn't, there was no like rumors or rumblings, you know, cause like it just happened last race and there was no, like, that's just how quick and that was it.
Yeah.
And then when did it happen? Before the weekend or after the weekend?
During Friday.
So now how much pressure did that put you under for the weekend?
Dude, I couldn't ride. I was like looking around. I was riding terrible. I was looking at the cameras. I was like, man, are they like, is people watching me right now? Like it was a lot of weird stuff to go on. I qualified terrible too. Qualified like 18th or something. I actually pulled it together on Sunday. I came through and like finished sixth or something, which was a pretty decent result. Fought through the pack, but.
And is that something that you just, I mean, say did you have to go through the weekend before you made a decision, or did you know right away, hey, I got unfinished business in Moto 2? Like, did you know, or did you ponder it through the weekend? And
no,
then,
I pondered it through the weekend, yeah. But then come Sunday and had the result that I did, and I thought, it's a good team I'm going to, and I know I can win. Yeah. So,
yeah. I had read somewhere that you kind of like consulted with Dovi a little bit about. Is that?
That kind of got a little bit blown out of proportion, honestly. I was just walking past him in the paddock, and he just asked me, and he's like, oh, so what'd you end up doing? And I was like, oh, I'm going to stay in Moto 2. And he's like, okay, cool, good decision. Yeah, that really got blown out of proportion.
Did anybody offer you, like, did anybody tell you you, like, 100% should take it? And
yeah, there's people saying you should, just people you shouldn't.
Like, people you actually, like, trusted in to kind of help you make the decision?
There was people that I really trusted who said I shouldn't go, and there was a lot of people that I trusted that said I should.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's something when it comes down to it, you just got to look
within
yourself.
Yeah, you
got to
do what you want
to
do, for sure. Yeah. That's awesome.
That's difficult.
That's tough. That's I can't imagine. I mean, because selfishly, like, that's your dream always, right? From, like, the moment you start racing is, like, you want to be at the very top. So it's pretty hard to, like, turn that away when you have it kind of in your lap in a way, you know?
Yeah.
But I guess looking back, you look at, like, Remy Gardner. Wins the Moto 2 champion, goes up, doesn't do a bad job. Like, I mean, he wasn't great, but he didn't do a bad job. And dude spit out a MotoGP.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I feel like if you go up, it's kind of, you got to take some sort of risk, but
it's I think it's got to be the right thing, and it has to feel right to you and the right package and all that.
And I guess that kind of leads me into, like, how hard is it getting, you know, the seats, they move so quick, like GP, round two, you know, if a big figurehead moves, then three seats get signed and stuff like that. Is it like at Moto and 2 as well? Do things get signed pretty quickly, like before the summer break? Or
yeah. It depends. I think last year stuff was dragging on past the summer break and stuff. But yeah, things like get figured out pretty soon in the paddock. I mean, that's why you got to make like a pretty good impression first half of the year.
Yeah, it's super crucial. Like,
yeah.
And now going into that, the MotoGP season, do you look at it as one season? I feel like it's kind of like three seasons in one. Like, you see people that come in hot and then they get to the summer break, they come back and it's like they lost a little bit. Like, they're just maybe not in that pocket you're talking about. And then maybe they come back, maybe they don't, they start crashing and whatnot. And like, you know, I feel like you can see people, like, it's almost like cycling a little bit with peaks, you know, like people come in and they peak too early and then they're nowhere towards the end of the season and stuff like that. How hard is it being in a MotoGP season being so long?
Yeah, I mean, that has its like mental toll on you. I mean, especially for like, I think it's easier for the Euro guys because they get to go home all the time, but somebody like American or maybe from Asia or something like that, or Australia, they have to make the commitment to like fully just either move there or you're just bouncing back and forth to home, which is not ideal. So that, like, mentally is, yeah, it's difficult, man. I mean, you're away from home, and I think after a while you start to, like, sometimes hard to keep that focus all the way through. Or if you have a bad result, it can kind of, like, take you down a peg a little bit, you know?
Yeah. And are the, you know, when you're traveling in the flyaways, going that far, like, not a lot of sleep, you're sleep deprived, this, that, and the other, you know, your first year doing it, how difficult was it, like, trying to figure it out? Did somebody kind of show you the ropes, or was it like...
No, I was like pretty much by myself, just traveling with the team. But it was exciting, man. I'm seeing the world and seeing all these places, racing tracks I like dreamed about racing. I mean, it was exciting.
And the, you know, the food, was that hard?
Food,
like, the only place I struggle with the food is like...
Carnivore diet.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really like eating steak on a race weekend, because I feel like it drains too much energy from me. But yeah, like places like Argentina, I struggle there because I'd heard all these stories like meat. People eating the food there and it being bad, and then you'd be like throwing up all night, and like that's like my worst nightmare before a race.
Can't even imagine.
So dude. I remember one year, actually, like my first year going to Argentina, I heard all these like horror stories about the food.
Just didn't eat for the whole weekend.
No, like people were like, oh, there was like worms in my food. And like people telling me all these crazy stories.
What?
Yeah. And so I remember I packed like a carry-on bag filled with like beef jerky, protein bars, like green powder to replace like salads, basically.
All PB2.
All this like protein powder and all this stuff. And like... I basically like smuggled it into Argentina. And
could you imagine?
I got to customs like sweating. Yeah. I was like, shit, they're gonna find all this stuff.
They're like, hey, it's like,
yeah.
Hey.
But it was funny, and I got so sick of protein bars after that.
I
can barely eat one now, honestly. But yeah, the food stuff, I mean, yeah, like Asia too. There's some places that are better than others. Thailand's not too bad. Like, the food's pretty decent there. I mean, you can always, like, nowadays, like, there's so many of these, I feel like the surf thing has, like, influenced, like, the surf cafes,
Australian
breakfast places, you know, there's, like, that's, like, infected the whole world. There's just these, like, nice cafes everywhere.
Are you a big Yelp guy? Like how do you search that stuff out? Like, how are you?
I mean, I just go by like what I feel when I show up to the place, look at it, and if it looks good to me, and if it's like packed, I know it's good.
Yeah.
No one's going back to somewhere they just got food poisoning. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's empty, I'm like, okay, I'm not going in there, you know?
Are you, I think I want to ask, what's your favorite track? Like, I mean, you've raced so many good tracks now. Like, so many. Now, do you look at your favorite track as the one that you've done the best at, or the one that, like, there's some tracks that I love, but I've got the worst fucking results, man. Like, every time I go there, I dread it. Like, Brands Hatch, man. I struggle, can't get it, but I love that track. It's so cool. Is there a track like that, or do you have a track that you've done super well at, and it's just like, every time you show up, like, maybe Bruno, you're just like, guys, like, this is it. Like, I'll see you in the rear view.
Bruno, I thought that way, honestly, because I just have always had a special moment there. Like, dating back to, I got my first Rookies Cup win there, top 10 in my first like Grand Prix there. So I've always had like a special love for that place, but it's not in the calendar anymore.
Yeah.
Which kind of sucks. But I'm a big fan of Phillip Island, but I have had that same thing where I know that track I could do super well at, but it's never kind of come together. Kind of almost did this year. I felt I had some speed, but had a couple issues in the race and had to retire. But yeah, that's another one of those tracks that I love. I think it's so amazing. The place is cool, but it just never has come together for me. Portugal, I love a lot.
That's a crazy track.
Crazy track. And on paper, I feel like it's not something that like suits me super well in a way, because it's got all these tight kind of things. But I just have found a flow there that just feels so good, and I really love that place.
What do you think it takes to be one of those guys? I mean, there's like seems to be a group of guys throughout the year, different times, but sometimes most of the year that is at the front. What do you think it takes to be kind of rounded enough to be one of those guys at the front at all the tracks?
I think it's having the good support around you with the team, a good headspace that can last a whole year. That goes back to your like way you're living at home, all sorts of stuff. Just very, I think it's just like your headspace, man. I mean, I'm figuring that out too, you know? I mean, that's what I feel is the right thing right now, is just surrounding yourself with the right people and feeling confident in yourself and not losing it, you know? It sounds a bit like, I always found like the beginning of this year, I found this feeling that, it's going to sound funny, but it felt like a little like energy in myself. And when I like focused on it, it was this feeling of confidence that carried my, like, I don't know. When I followed that, I could do something really good on track. And when you feel that, I feel like if you have that through the whole year, I think you'd have a great season.
Have you ever worked with a mental coach?
Yeah, for sure. I have.
Like what, like going into this coming season, is that some of the stuff you're working? It sounds like mentality type stuff is more what you're focused on right now.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm focused on what I can control, you know, the things I can do, which is like my training, my mentality, and just going out there and getting it done.
Yeah, you know, for sure. I had a kind of going back a little bit on the GP thing, but have you had any other offers since then?
I've had some other stuff come up and stuff, yeah.
But obviously nothing like worthwhile.
Well, I don't know, man. I want to get into
detail. You still want to get the job done in Moto2, no matter what. Is that like a solid, like the end of this year, factory Yamaha calls you, Like, are you still saying, no, I want to stay in Moto2 until I get...
Dude, come on. That is so loaded. Factory Yamaha, dude.
I know, but it's like, you know, that was your reasoning back then. Is it still kind of the same thing for you? Like, you still have this unfinished business type of feeling no matter what, and that's a strong hold for you on moving up? Or are you like...
I mean, I want to have a really stellar year this year and do really well and win races and win more races and be on the podium more and try to contend for the championship. I mean, that's what I'm going for. Obviously I want to be in GP. I think that's where everyone wants to be. So have this, I think I have to do what I'm saying in order to go up, you know? So there's no other way to really think about it. I never really try to think about GP and like, if I do this, it will mean this, you know, because that's just all ifs and buts. And what actually matters is what you get done.
Yeah. 100%.
You know,
what do you think like the future, like in the GP class is in terms of where things are going? Like, what do you, if you could pick an ideal scenario, what do you think that would be?
What, where I would want to go?
Yeah.
Oh man, I don't even know right now, to be honest.
Seems like it's like peculiar going into this season, like which brand is kind of the bike that's going to start to take stuff. Obviously Ducati's always got the upper hand, it seems like, the last couple of years.
Yeah, Ducati's always killing it. I've been really killing it recently. I mean, that bike looks pretty great. I'm curious to see what like Aprilia will do now with the satellite team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having Miguel. I think Miguel is a really great rider.
I'm very underrated for sure.
Super underrated.
Yeah, I think I'm really curious to see what he'll do.
Is there a team, you know, you've got like Paul or Jorge, they said like Repsol Honda, that was their dream as a little kid. Is there a certain team that you're like, you know, Ducati Red, like I want to see myself. Is there a certain team that you, if you could have any team you could go to, that you, is your dream bike team that, you know, in MotoGP? Like, do you know what I'm saying? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, totally. I know what you're saying. I mean, I've had a lot of influences over the years. I mean, Repsol Honda with Nikki has been such, like, that would be sick,
right,
to do that. I mean, Jorge with Yamaha and Vale with Yamaha. That's been that's a sick package. My dad was always a big Ducati guy, so I've always felt a little bit of a connection to Ducati in a way.
I guess, like, maybe my question is, you can go back in the liveries, like, you know, maybe not 2023 bike and look. So, like, oh, I wish.
Which colors Marble, do you match yourself in?
Yeah, like Marlboro, you know, Ducati.
I see him going back Lucky Strike days.
Dude, for sure.
You see me going back that way. Yeah.
I can see it. Joe, a couple Umbrella Girls, sick hanging out.
Yeah, I feel a little bit that energy, honestly. Maybe like Barry Sheen.
Yeah.
I would love that, honestly. Yeah, honestly, one of those days would be sick.
Yeah.
Do you think it would be cool to ride like a 500 two-stroke?
Are you kidding me? Yes. That'd be like, so cool.
Do you think you would like instantly just high side your face off? Or what?
I'm very curious. I mean, I feel like the tires would be like... No, they probably have tires for it now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm very curious to see what that would be like. You know what I never got to ride was a 250 GP bike.
Dude, I did. I mean, not GP, but I got to ride a 250. And like, I rode a 125 GP in like US GBRU or whatever, and I was just horrible. Like, I already moved to 450s and stuff like that in dirt tracks, so I'm just like brr, 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 and I'm just getting smoked. I just remember just getting smoked. But I got a 250, the thing was sweet. That thing was wheelie, it was so light, like not typical James Rispoli style, because you can't like hang it out like in the way
is that your style?
I definitely think I'm like, I'm loose.
A little loose.
I think so. Like, I think like if I could wear a cowboy hat, I would.
Right.
You know what I mean? But it was wild. Like, there was so much power. It was so stiff. I remember I got to just, it was one time and I'll never forget it. It was super smooth. It was awesome. It was like probably one of my favorite bikes.
I think it would have like torque all the way through.
Wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it feels like a 450. Like, you just got, like, you have torque and you want to spin it, but like, I mean, I wasn't spinning at that age. You know? Like, I was crashing.
Yeah, it looks like it would have been so fun to ride, but yeah.
I feel like you kind of have this like eclectic style about you. How would you kind of describe yourself in that way? Like,
can you define that?
You've always had like this kind of like old school vibe about you, and I think that's kind of, you know, puts you a little bit different than most people, especially as things kind of go in a different direction style wise like, you look at guys like Fabio and them that are wearing like, you know, all these kind of Gucci outfits and stuff like that. You're kind of more old school style? Is that, you know, where does that come from?
I mean, it's hard to kind of like look at yourself and define like what you, how you are, you know. I feel like that's like interpretation of someone else, but I mean, I've always just taken influences from like friends I have in New York that have cool different styles and things like that, or maybe old bands that wear certain things from like the olden times.
Like, what's your favorite old school band then?
Old school band? Oh man, that's like so hard. That's like asking what your favorite movie is, man.
All right, I mean, dude, it's...
I mean, I love, like, I feel like some of my favorite bands, I love the Strokes a lot. They're one of my favorite bands, but they're early 2000s kind of thing. Oh man, I don't know, there's so many. Like Stone Roses, I think, are really cool. Britpop band.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, there's a few, but
Would you be like a rock star if you, like, is that something that if you weren't a racer, you know?
I mean, wouldn't you want to be 100%. A rock star if you were a racer?
It's like the second best, right?
I mean, 100%.
Why not, man?
I would be like just lead guitarist, you know what I mean? Just,
yeah.
Yeah.
Your brother's like a pretty successful actor, right?
Yeah, he's done a couple things like Netflix shows and stuff. Yeah.
Did you ever like consider going that route instead? Like, you, that's kind of what I mean. You have like that vibe about you. Like, you could kind of go that direction if you wanted to, you know what I mean?
Dude, it's funny. I had like my brother's agents at one time, like, you got to try it. You have a commercial look. You should try acting.
I remember we went to, remember that one time we went to, like, you went to a casting and you got your truck towed.
Oh, you were there for that. Yeah. That was like the last audition I ever did. I think it's because I got my truck towed. That was like an IHOP commercial. Oh man. They asked me, they're like, this is the setting. You're at Six Flags. You just got off a roller coaster. You're with your brother. You want to go get some pancakes. All right, go. And I remember going like, wow, that was a sick roller coaster, right? Let's go grab some pancakes. They're like, stop. We need a little more enthusiasm. You just got off a roller coaster and you want some pancakes. I'm like, all right, first of all, if I just got off a roller coaster, I need like a seltzer water to settle my stomach. I'm not trying to go eat a stodgy pancakes right now, you know.
Did they know you were a racer? Like, that's like,
yeah, maybe that's the whole thing. I just like didn't really give a shit. Yeah. You know, I was just like, this is stupid, you know. I want to go ride my bike, you know. But I mean, at times I think it would be fun. Like, there's a lot of movies I love that I think would be like, it would be sick to like be in it. Steve McQueen is like such a huge, I mean, like so many, you know, is such a huge idol for me, and like been watching a lot more of his stuff recently. So if there was like something artistic and cool, maybe I'd like, would love to try it. I'm no idea if I'd be good at it, but I think it would be fun to try, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure.
But I got more stuff to do with racing.
Yeah,
you know?
No, for sure.
Let's not like get ahead of ourselves. Yeah, it's hypothetical. You know,
I feel like we just see you in that vibe, so it's like pretty easy to talk about, you know.
Okay, cool.
What you know, I think a lot of people kind of chalk you up to that like California surfer boy vibe, like in Europe. Is that kind of the same type of thing? Like, do you have that kind of persona about you? Like, people are always trying to build these storylines, right? Like, do you feel like you fit in that mold the way that they try to make it out to be, or is that just overhyped?
Yeah, no, I think anything like Americana in Europe is super over exaggerated. Yeah, you know, the whole look, the California walking down Hollywood Boulevard, you know, it's like, I don't think I've been to Hollywood Boulevard, like walked on it for 10 years or something, you know. So maybe that's not true, but found myself there some nights, but in the off season,
yeah,
of course, you know,
deep in the off
season, deep in the off season, fresh out of the last race of the year,
and you went for a 10K run in the morning. Yeah, that's no big deal.
Then I got went for the grind the next morning. But yeah, there is that whole thing, you know. It's just like, which is cool to play up for sure. I think Hollywood has always been a bit over the top, and you know, they make everything exaggerated. So, but I don't know, man. I just do my thing. I get up in the morning, do my thing, and go to a coffee shop. Maybe get a breakfast burrito. Walk down, do, you know, it's just like I'm just a normal dude doing my thing. Yeah,
for sure. I know how that goes over there. What about I mean, for the ladies out there, what's the deal? Where are you at?
Where am I at?
Yeah, what's it like being the American Playboy in Europe?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Is it hard?
No, it's not hard.
Do you have bodyguards?
Huh?
Keeping them off, you know what I mean?
Oh, I don't know about that. Still, I got to figure it out, man. You got to have a system, a little bit of like approach to it. But I don't know. I have like the dating apps.
Okay.
Yeah. But I'm trying, I don't know. I'm trying to settle down, man. I think that would be really good for me. I'm 25.
Settle down 25?
Well, not like settle down, okay. But you know, have some.
Something steady.
Something steady.
Okay.
I'm at that point.
Would you bring your chick with you on the road?
If it was like the right situation.
She was the one.
If she was the one, she really spoke to me.
Do you think that would help you? Or
I don't know. I'd see a lot of, it's a really something I was thinking about. It's a lot, like an interesting thing. Like you see a lot of successful athletes that have like someone by their side and, you know,
kind of
22
rock.
And they've got like a wife and a kid already, you know, that was, blew my mind. I was like, what the hell? But it kind of makes sense in a way. But I think it has to be the right person.
Yeah.
I never wanted to surround myself with people that affect me in a bad way, like toxic things. So I've never like jumped into relationships, you know, found myself just kind of floating around.
Yeah. is it being over in Europe? Is it like at the races? Is it pretty tough? Is there a lot of hot chicks? Like, what is it?
No, there's a lot of dudes, man. There's a lot of dudes.
Is there groupies? What is it?
I mean, I feel like.
Come on, Joe.
Got him under pressure, dude.
There can be, but it's not always the thing I'm looking for.
Yeah, of course.
You know?
Yeah, no, I can only imagine being over there, especially where it's a lot more like pop culture to be a racer. Like when you're trying to do your thing and stay focused, like you're not trying to get into that as much.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe after.
But
maybe after. Yeah.
I've definitely maybe taken a trip to Lisbon to meet somebody before.
Okay, all right.
What's the wildest one you've had in terms of like lengths you've gone? Like you've literally just flown to Lisbon to meet with somebody?
Yeah.
Just straight
up.
You
got to take a chance for love.
Yes. Like a shot in the dark.
This is what we need right here.
What are you talking about?
Was it like a blind thing? You just like showed up?
It was a blind thing, yeah.
You flew through a blind thing?
Yeah.
How far is the flight? Like, well, give me that.
Well, the great thing about Europe is everything's quite close. It was only about an hour, two-hour flight.
Did you rent a car? Or did you?
No.
Okay.
Lisbon's a good walking city. Got my exercise in.
How'd it work out for you?
Yeah, she was great, but it wasn't the one.
She wasn't the one.
Do you think she'll know if she listened to this podcast?
I don't think she'll listen.
Okay. Oh, man, all right. That's great.
Yeah, but no, where else did I do that? Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to incriminate myself, but
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
There's been some friends along the way.
I love it.
Yeah.
Nice.
I think you got to.
Yeah, you have to, man.
Dude.
You know, this...
Like, you're traveling the world. What do you... I mean...
Yeah.
You gotta live.
You gotta live, man.
You gotta love.
Got a lot of respect for that, too. You know?
Yeah. No, I do think there's something to be said for the stability and,
yeah,
and having somebody, like, you know, that you know is in your corner no matter what. There's something to be said for that, for sure.
Yeah.
You know?
Ride or die, baby.
Yeah. I think some people definitely, like, know that from early on, and some people it takes a little bit longer to sort that out for themselves, that they kind of want some stability, whatever the case is. You know?
I feel like there was a stigma early on too. Like if you had a chick when you were young and like being professional, that was like, oh, you're going to get distracted and this, that, and the other. And then see like, you know, some of these motocrossers and supercrossers, like they're super young, you know, and they get better.
Well,
you know,
the thing is I had a girlfriend that was like that, like a bit of like a, didn't want me, like it was a bit of a distraction from the racing thing too, you know?
Yeah.
So like she didn't really understand the thing.
Yeah,
the
you
lifestyle.
Gotta. I feel like you gotta have somebody that you can spread your wings with.
Yeah,
it's tough. It's a selfish sport. I mean, any like anything that you're like trying to be at the top level at. It's
yeah,
like so much.
It's pretty
personal.
Hard to climb to the top with a backpack on. Right. I mean, it is.
Yeah, but it does take. It takes a lot. It takes a certain type of person that's willing to.
Yeah, totally.
Kind of do that. At least I feel like, you know.
It's same.
Yeah. Jimmy's girlfriend just moved all the way over from Netherlands.
I mean, dude.
Oh, yeah. You got a Dutch.
Yeah. Dutchy.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's cool, man.
Yeah, it is pretty cool.
I like Holland. I think it's cool.
It's super cool. It's wild.
Yeah.
It's a fun time.
They don't really have their own food, though. They kind of just.
What do you mean? They got french fries, bro.
Yeah, they just kind of take from everyone else.
And stroop waffles.
Yeah.
and mayo.
Oh, dude. Have you not had the mayo there?
Maybe. I don't know.
You got to.
It's not really on the diet,
Yeah, it is. It's a delicacy.
You know what I have had is in Amsterdam, there's this like pie spot called Winkle something. and it's the best apple pie I've ever had in my life.
Really?
Yeah.
What's it called? Winkle?
Winkle. I'm going to text my girlfriend right now. Seriously.
You should. Like, yeah. Dude, are you kidding me? You didn't take me here?
Yeah. She might know it, honestly. I bet. It's in Amsterdam, but it's banging.
Now, I've got another one for you. What's your opinion on Kemby coming back to the U.S.? Were you kind of bummed to see him leave?
I'm bummed he didn't tell me sooner. I was hurt. I had to find out through the media. How could he do that to me, man? I thought we were close.
Did he ever make salsa when he was over there?
You know what? I actually tried his homemade hot sauce.
He's a hot sauce guy.
Yeah.
I tried his hot sauce. He's got some salsa. We briefly like lived in the same apartment complex before my apartment got flooded. And he made me a hot sauce one night. It was
1 to 10. Let's do it. Like,
I thought it was good. I thought it was
too
like
hot.
I'm never going to give a 10. I think.
Yeah. Can't.
I think it was like, I think it was 8.5. He wasn't super stoked with it.
Oh.
But
was
I,
it because
I was.
Was he overseas and couldn't get the ingredients that he
I
normally
think it
has?
Was that. Okay. Yeah.
Fair point.
But it was good.
Give me
it
a little
good.
Leeway.
But I don't know. I think Cam's like, I have a lot of respect for him, honestly. I've always looked up to him as a rider. Because he's older than me. I think he's like 3 or 4 years older than me. And so he was always the reference, you know, when I was a kid. I remember meeting him at Thunder Hill when I was a little kid. And I was so stoked. I might even ask for a photo with him.
We got to dig that one up.
Yeah, but
that would be so funny.
But I think, yeah, coming over there, coming from like a super bike, which is a totally different style, and then showing up and being competitive right away, I think was pretty impressive. But I mean, yeah, he's got his thing, you know. I think he's got a good deal going here, and he's got a baby on the way and all that. So I think it's a good deal for him. I think he has some results over there to be proud of, too. I mean, it's not an easy class to just make an impression on, you know.
100%. I think, I mean, personally, I think people didn't expect him to do as well as he did. Like,
I think
they
were
like,
very
he's a little bit old to go over there, whatever the case is. Yeah. I think people like got a lot more respect for him based on what he did.
Yeah.
I feel like he had a couple of good charge races from behind and passed some top dogs late.
We had some fun battles this year, actually.
So, like, does it matter, though? Like, so he's like, or you got Sean, but he's really your only other American in there. Are you passing him clean or are you just going for it?
Oh, no. What are you kidding? I'm passing as dirty as I
love
can,
it.
Man.
All right.
We had some, I remember it, where was it? Indonesia. It was the last corner, last lap, and I stopped. I just sent it right in there because I had a terrible race. I like qualified really bad. I was 19th or something, and I was coming through. And I think it was a spot. I think we were battling for like 11th place or something. But you know, he was right there. I was like, I'm not. This is it. I'm going right down to the last corner. And
now, do you think like top American has anything to do with it, or is it just another spot?
Oh, I don't know about that. I mean, yeah, maybe, but.
To you,
another spot is another spot.
Another point, some more points.
You should ask Jake Dixon about that, actually. Barcelona 2019, we're battling for 19th place or 20th place. And it was like we were both on KTMs. And the last lap, last corner, Barcelona. And I was like, I don't care. It's another person. I got to pass him. And I tried to do the Valentino last lap, last corner pass in Barcelona. Totally messed it up. I like lost the front, plowed into the side of him. I saved it, but he went into the gravel, crash, dude. And he was pitted right next to me.
Was he pissed?
Oh, he was
so, dude,
livid.
He gets hot.
He was livid. He came into my box. He's like, "What the fuck are you doing? Battling for last place." I was like, "Hey, it's another spot. It's another spot, man."
Dude, that's
sorry.
So funny because I crashed in front of him in Super Sport and BSB, and we're actually friends now because of it. I crashed in front of him at a Shell at Oldham Park, and it's this banked corner, and I high-sided, and he just ran into me. And then he got up, and I'm just like, dude, I'm KO'd. Like, I am hurting. I'm on my knees and everything, and he comes up to, like, slap me in the head. And, of course, I took, like, 4 other people out during it.
So, like, they're all
my,
coming
my
up
guardian angel, Ben Wilson, came up and was like, "Hey, you." And then ever since then we became friends. But I'll tell you, like, he's definitely one of them guys. He is, if there's any daylight, he's taking it. He's one of those. He is cutthroat, and we'll laugh about it later. So it totally cool to do it, like,
well, it wouldn't
because he would do it to you for 19th.
Well, that's what I said back to him. I was like, well, you wouldn't have done that
Fuck you no, know? He would have, dude. Yeah. Fucking Laza, dude.
Is there one guy, we were talking about this yesterday, is there one guy, like you always kind of have that guy in your class that you, when they're behind you the or freezy. Around you, you're like...
The freezy.
The freezy. The freezy.
Oh, the person who like gets in like...
Not even like hits you, but just like you're always kind of like a little bit worried about when you're in their vicinity.
Who's the last guy you want behind you going into the last lap?
Oh, dude, there's a corner. Few, honestly. I mean, there's some like the Italian riders that just like, they'll just... throw it in there. It doesn't matter what, you know.
But is there a guy, like, is there a Vince Freeze?
I'm trying to think.
He's just a class example.
Dude, Vince you Freeze. Just got, he's a verb, dude.
I mean, there was a minute there that Jake was just kind of really throwing it in there to riders.
Wow, dude, Dixon, I never thought you'd be the guy on the pod, dude.
Aaron Canet sometimes
oh, yeah.
can be a little bit like that. Maybe, yeah, I don't know. Alonzo Lopez, too. Some of these guys I sometimes don't think they're thinking when they're riding, you know? But so that, just, maybe that's why they're so fast.
I think that's a certain type of rider.
Yeah, it's sure. a certain type yeah. of
some
rider.
Some guys who just turn it off. And
yeah. But
they also can crash huge, too. It's yeah. wild.
Yeah.
Well, we're getting pretty deep on time. What one thing that I was going to hear is, like, obviously things have changed even since you started as a kid, and it's getting more and more difficult. It's not getting easier. But what would you... offer as advice for kids that are kind of watching you right now, like they want to be you?
Right. Yeah, but it's funny, things have changed a lot since I was a kid. You know, when I was growing up, I kind of grew up in this like last surge of, I think it's coming back now. There's a lull for a while for the American like road race scene, especially in the mini stuff. It was like maybe like two kids that are racing against each other. I was lucky to like grow up with a time of like a lot of good riders that kind of trickled into like the AMA days, racing 600s, racing like USGPRU and all that. But I mean, I think, yeah, I mean, the thing is like when I was racing, I never like thought of it like, okay, I'm going to be a MotoGP rider. You know, it was only until I got to like Rookies Cup or even racing 600s in America that I thought like, oh, this could be like an actual future, you know? And maybe that was a good thing for me because it was more just like a thing that I did with my dad that we just had fun and let it like grow naturally in my own head, like this love for what I'm doing and like the speed. It wasn't like a forced thing. Sometimes I see these like moto dads that are just like so intense,
yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's like, do you want to be Rossi? Do you want to be Rossi? Or naming their kid that, you know? So, yeah. You know, it's just like, I think there, yeah, I don't know. I think there's that. It's just trying to be patient with it, and right now the good thing is like the GP age has gotten a little older, so there's a little less pressure to like jump straight into it, which I think is a good thing. But yeah, just enjoy it. I think getting over to Europe is a good bet, trying to get into that kind of scene and seeing how those guys ride and all that. I mean, there's a whole structure there, man, the kids that are racing, and it's just, I know everyone talks about it all the time, but really you see it, like they've got little mini GP teams for kids that are 12. You know?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Data guys and all that. I mean, I didn't have a data guy till I was like 17.
Yeah.
You know, even like racing my first year of 600s, honestly, till I got to Moto 2 European Championship, I never had looked at a data sheet really. I was like, didn't even know what any of the graphs or anything meant. You know, it was just like working on my throttle control, my braking points, and trying to like beat the next guy and feeling that competitive thing, you know?
Yeah.
And do you think like, you know, when you went over to, was it CEV?
Mm-hmm.
So did, like, do you got to do it right away? I mean, obviously it costs money, right? So like, depending on who you are, we all know like some people get better deals and whatnot. And
yeah.
If you're a good talent, you can get on some good teams. Now, you know, is there a difference in going over there when you're super young and just paying a boatload to get there? Like, what do you think? I know everybody's a little different, but do you think getting there as early as possible?
I don't know nowadays. I mean, I think making an impression right away is good. I think you can build, if you can make an impression on these teams, they'll take a chance.
Yeah.
You know, prove to them on their own stomping ground that you're better than all the rest. I think then you have the chance to have like a deal that's like lasting and not coming up with €300,000 to put, you know, to pay your way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was pretty lucky that I got kind of the deals I got. I've definitely had a lot of luck to get where I am now.
That's, I think that's, you have to.
Yeah. I mean, considering it seems kind of crazy, the situations I've come from to get to where I am now. I mean, I've definitely like worked my ass off, but
yeah, you kind of have to make this cliche, but make your own luck. You know, it's
yeah.
Anybody that wants to get to the top, it's got to take some kind of luck, but you have to put yourself in the
yeah
position to be there.
Yeah, but I think getting over there is a good shout.
I think CEV is probably the ticket. Is that like how was that super hard? AGR is a pretty good team. Like they're a pretty good team in that series, right?
Yeah, they were. I gelled really well with that team. I worked with a guy that I grew up with. Like he had helped me with my 125 days and he was managing the team. So I already had a feeling of like, I was comfortable being in that team.
You were at the party with your boy.
Yeah.
Everybody else is pretty cool with you.
I had a crew chief that was cool and showed me the ropes and taught me like braking techniques, you know, taught me how to use a rear brake, all those things. Cause like I never had done all that stuff from racing road racing.
But even being a dirt tracker, you never really tried it?
I mean, I wasn't like a huge dirt tracker, you know? Yeah. So like I just did my own way, you know? Mm-hmm. So I learned, I would study with AGR, like Jonas Folger rode for them, Marcel Schroeder. So I would study their data constantly, the different braking techniques, how quick they like got to full power. I remember seeing this like braking map where they'd go from like off throttle to 12 bar, like right away. And that blew my mind. Like when I was like first getting on that bike, it like took me a while to like, you know, I used to just build into the pressure, which that was more the Honda technique. I feel like now it's like actually better to be a bit more progressive with your braking. But yeah, just different things you learn. So all that stuff, I guess the point is all that stuff will come. Just be patient.
Yeah, okay.
And have fun.
And have fun.
Right? I think people take it so serious. Well, you got to, but man, if you take the fun out of it, you see so many people just get burnt early, right?
There's a time it'll all be very, very serious and there'll be a lot of money and stuff behind you. So while it's like not like that, have as much fun.
Yeah.
I got one last one.
Do it. You got to do it. This is your question. Let's go. This is it. This is a big one.
What's
buddy.
This one?
This is big. A special guest question from my girlfriend. If you were on death row in jail,
right?
Don't want to say why. If you were in death row, what would your last meal be?
My last meal?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Make it good, buddy.
There's a burger from LA called For the Win. It's like a smash burger. I probably would have that.
What is it?
It's just the most
plain burger.
Simple burger.
There's nothing in it?
No, it has, it's more than that.
Okay, talk to us.
Potato bun.
Really?
Potato bun. It's like a smashed kind of burger down.
What's in it?
Cheese and pickles and this special sauce.
Do you know what's in the special sauce?
I don't. It's a special sauce.
What does it taste like?
What's the
sauce? Sort of like an aioli mixed with Thousand Island.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And maybe, I don't know, if I was about to be on death row, maybe a big bottle of tequila or something to wash it
that's
down.
Your drink. Okay.
That's your drink of choice? That's your drink of choice?
I don't know. Like, maybe that would be the nicest way to go. So, right.
Are you doing French fries or no?
I do French fries, okay. Yeah.
Sweet or regular?
Sweet? What the hell? Sweet French fries?
Sweet potato fries, man. Come on, sweet potato fries.
Oh, sweet potato. No, what?
No,
last meal, we're going full starch. Full.
Okay. Now, are you doing like one patty or two?
We're doing three patties.
Oh, that's it?
Ooh.
That's what it is?
I mean, In-N-Out, my order is 3x1.
What? How often do you do In-N-Out, big dog?
Not that much. I did it on the way over here. I did it on the way over here because that was the only thing on option.
Because we're deep in the off-season.
Dude, he ran 10K.
Dude, I worked my ass off today, all right?
100%. Yeah, 100%. I saw you out there.
Putting motos in, keeping up with Greg White's brother. Well, we really, really appreciate you coming on, being the first guest. It was kind of cool to have you come out and ride for the day and then do this. This is a cool way to do it, I think. So how can people find you on the internet?
It's pretty simple. Joe Roberts Racer. That's how you
there you go.
That's my Instagram handle. But yeah, thanks for having me out, man. It was a really fun day. And yeah, had a good time talking with you guys.
Yeah, thanks for giving us some stories that people that they might have not have heard or... And giving us some good insight, man. It's been a pleasure for having you for our first podcast. So we really appreciate it.
Cool. After you get that dub this year, we can announce the GP ride on here.
All right.
Yeah.
Sounds good, man. Cool.
All right. Appreciate it.
Thank you, man.
Yeah, thank you.